Hey, this is Mark Altman of Inglourious Treks, Prince in the 430 Movie. And if you're a fan of our podcast, you don't want to miss Deck 78, available now by subscribing at treksprinceplus.com. This is a bonus podcast full of great discussions about popular culture, film, and television. By your command, here's a sneak peek.
But isn't that an advantage you have? You know, people think, oh, writing is just about writing, but it's not. You're also doing the line of the line producer.
Oh, yeah.
You got to understand, like, what you can afford to do and what you can. And that makes you a valuable commodity as opposed to somebody who has to be rewritten, not because they're not a great writer, but because they don't understand budget and they're writing these shows that are unproducible.
Yeah, I call it writing inside a box, which is basically writing to a budget, but without limiting yourself creatively. There are ways to do that where you're actually challenging yourself in a way that you find something better than you might have otherwise if you had the money for it. One of my favorite things to do is trap characters because it forces them into situations that reveal themselves. And you know, so you could put people on a run on a city street in Rome or trap them in an elevator. You're going to find more about them by trapping them in an elevator. So there are ways to write economically that are actually better creatively. Yeah. And so you just got to take those opportunities when they come.
Derek, you started as a writer's assistant. Do you think that was sort of a great incubator for you finding out on a very cost, what are we calling it again? Reasonably budgeted show, Andromeda. You know, working
it was called,
for Robert.
It was called syndication.
The old days of first run syndication. Yeah. And now we're pining away for those days. At the time, it was like, oh, what the hell? And now it's like, oh, first run syndication. Remember that? So did you learn a lot in that hard, fast crucible of being a writer's assistant? And also what, you know, how you write a script that is producible for a limited budget?
Sure. I mean, you observe and as a writer's assistant, you're watching these writers pull their hair out as they're trying to figure out how to write in a box. Because most of the time, you know, writing the bottle episode is the most expensive episode.
Yeah.
It's like you start out with the intent of like making sure that this is an episode where we're going to be able to afford and do and all. And it ends up costing more somehow
every single time.
And, you know, since we don't have the luxury of going to Italy on Quantum, I was like, we go to Italy on the Universal backlot. You know, it's like we're going to go to this country on the Universal backlot.
Like,
so. Not unlike the $6 Million Man did.
Very much so.
Yeah. So subscribe today at treksprinceplus.com and don't miss a single episode of Deck 78. Fire the rockets.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, this is Mark A. Altman.
And this is Darren Dockerman.
And this is Ashley Miller.
And we are the Inglourious
Treksperts. Say it with me. Na, 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 na. Na, 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 na. Hey, there. We got na, na.
We're not doing that.
You're not going to say that with me. Na, 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 na. And Terry. No? Okay.
No.
Wow.
I'm giddy. You know why I'm giddy? Because Terry and Nana are back on the show, and we love Terry and Nana. In case
so much luminosity on stage.
The luminosity is
off
the charts.
You can't even see.
It's 22 AUs in diameter. That's how much luminosity it's giving
off. You never say that to a woman.
No, I don't mean, I'm saying that that's how amazing. The luminosity. Oh, okay. It's like that probe, the ILEA probe. On Star Trek, the motion picture, where they got to cover their eyes. It's so bright. The luminosity. Right.
The star power. The sheer star power on stage with us.
Don't interfere. Nobody interfere.
You'll put your
Absolutely,
eye out.
Absolutely, I will not interfere.
I'm not going to tell you what Ashley says because you got to hear it for yourself. But Ashley has one of the great Trexpress jokes of all time coming up. Usually that's Darren. Darren's the funniest of the three of us. But Ashley has the funniest joke during this panel. And you'll see, because you, on stage, they are wearing, because it's so cold in the convention center. I loved it, by the way. They're wearing black knit hats and like these heavy jackets. It's like they think they're outside or something. That's what they, so picture that when you're listening. Instead of them wearing whatever they're wearing, I know you may picture other things, but in this case, it's a knit stocking cap and a heavy jacket.
And you'll understand the comment that Ashley makes.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. I had teed up there for you. Teeing it up.
I love to get teed up.
So Terry was in a wheelchair most of the weekend.
Because it was for her Ironside audition.
She's okay.
We can't think Ironside with Terry Farrell. I love it. Oh,
she's
my
okay,
God.
But she had to have some minor foot surgery, and she was in a boot and had trouble walking. So,
and not like in a Canadian sense, like when you're trying to say about, but it sounds like a boot. Like she was acting like a boot.
An actual boot.
A boot. Yeah.
She was a trooper.
Put her
and
in
she,
the boot. She Your did agonizer, the, please.
He did the whole weekend in pain. So, you know.
Maybe she needs an aspirin.
Maybe she did.
Maybe.
Horrible pain.
Suffering.
I don't know who said that.
That's so inside baseball. It's unfreaking believable.
Just keep coming.
Even
Just
for
keep
you.
Coming. Here's the thing. I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to confide in you who are listening to this. We don't normally like to peel the curtain back. But here, pay no attention to the men behind the curtain. We've recorded a lot of these raps today. Like we're recording a bunch of raps, right? That means the stuff that goes around the episodes that we do, the live interviews that Karen Walker hates. So we've done a lot and we're just going stir crazy. It's like Ashley's gone to the bathroom three times already. We've done so many of these.
I like a pee.
And so I'm just losing my mind.
Snap yourself out of it, Mark. We need you.
Badly. Okay. I'm back with you guys now. So first of all, I got to say, Nana is perhaps one of the great dinner companions of all time.
Indeed.
So much fun. It's so funny because, you know, we never like to, you know, it's like we give people an option. You know, you're going to join us or not, but we don't push because there are a million reasons why people may not want to. We had Nana joined us for dinner every night.
Every night.
Every night. And I got to tell you, that was so generous of her to pick up dinner at Martini because that was not an inexpensive meal, the way we ate, because I got the arancini as an appetizer, which was really good. And I know you were smart because you're like, the lasagna here is big, so I'm not having the appetizer. So I had to eat the whole appetizer myself because gluten-free boy over here wouldn't eat it. And you were like, I'm pacing myself.
Yeah.
And then we had the most amazing entrees. But the guy could not keep up with my water.
No.
You were dying
of thirst. It was like a racket.
He was dying of thirst. He was dying.
In a storage compartment full of grain.
He was dying of thirst. Exactly. And he was a lovely waiter, but, couldn't keep up with the water consumption. It's because they didn't have bottled water, man. I had to wait for the tap water. That's why I like to get bottled water. So there's always enough water on the table.
You're bottled water, man.
To satiate my parchedness. So anyway, that's either here or there. But for those of you wondering from last year, I didn't get the chicken parmesan again, which wasn't as transplendent as it was last year, but it was still good.
Can I just ask?
Transplendent?
Transplendent?
Yeah, that's the only word for it. It's an Annie Hall reference. I understand it going above your head. It's not an Altman mispronunciation. It's an Annie Hall reference.
Okay. Well, that's fair. You know, actually, either of those answers are fair. So.
But boy, did we have good dessert. I got the bread pudding again, and it was sensational. And then when I went to the bathroom, she took half of it. But she took my bread pudding, and then she tried to deny it.
I'm like, just because I love that character of Major Kira doesn't mean you're entitled to take my bread pudding.
Are you going to watch Deep Space Nine differently now?
Yeah.
Every time, like, she's like, yeah, you know,
Goldberg those Bajorans or whatever,
but you ate my bread pudding.
I'm going to side with the Cardassians. I'm going to like, those Bajorans steal my food. I'm going to have a new sympathy for Gul Dukat now. No, not at all. I love the Na, and I'm so excited about her book. She has been working on this book about the women of Star Trek and how
which
the perception
I think still should be the title of that book. The women. The Just women, call it yeah. The women.
Yeah, exactly. And she's interviewed a ton of people, and we put her in touch with a few people we know as well. And I think it's going to be extraordinary. And I'm looking forward to reading it because it's a book that Ed Gross and I could not have written. And so I'm very excited about reading Na'na and her unique perspective on it. Because again, this is something she didn't have ghostwritten. You know, this was her writing it entirely. It's coming out later this year, and I think it's going to be spectacular. And I'm so excited to read it. She's terrific. And, you know, I wish Terry wasn't in a wheelchair because she would have joined. It would have been impossible to navigate that restaurant in a wheelchair. Absolutely impossible because it was so compact. But this is a great conversation. And, you know, we've talked to them before. I think we've had them on the podcast before together and separately, but I think this is a really great conversation. And, much to their chagrin, we opened it. We showed clips from Matlock, of Na'na in Matlock, and Terry in Back to School, and they were mortified, which was not the intention. They said, you did this to embarrass us. Not at all. It was more to show like what their career was like going into Deep Space Nine. We would never do that to embarrass them, or at least them. There are other people I would
embarrass. Because we love them.
Because we love them. It's all about the love.
Yeah.
It's all about the love. We do. We do love them. And we loved them then, we love them now.
That's the beauty of it.
Because I was huge fans of both of them on Deep Space Nine.
Yep.
And you know, Na'na talks about how much some men were threatened by a powerful woman. I loved that back then.
You know, it's funny. I talked to her a little bit about and you'll hear her discuss it on stage, you know, that whole perception that she has about fandom and their relationship with to Major Kira and how they felt about Major Kira. And, you know, I went up to her after the panel and I said, you know, I was heavily into the online Star Trek discussion community, the Usenet community, and where the perception and the discussion was 180 degrees opposite of what she was saying on stage. But of course, what she was reacting to was what she was feeling from conventions. So it's just, it's interesting how these little self-selecting pockets and also how, you know, people within those pockets who are the loudest mouthed, right, are the ones who seem to drive the conversation and create the perception when the reality is something very different. But I know she was very appreciative about hearing that you know, people, I think the fan community, the true fan community, the larger fan community, loved that character from Go. And it's a lesson to all of us just because somebody is loud and negative, it doesn't mean that they represent everyone.
This is true.
100%. So let's join our conversation with Terry Farrell, the Na'na visitor, on stage live at GalaxyCon right now after these brief commercial messages. And we'll be back with some closing thoughts after the interview.
I can't believe I ate that whole thing.
You ate it, Ralph.
I can't believe I ate that whole thing.
No, Ralph, I ate it.
I can't believe I ate that whole thing.
Take two Alka-Seltzer.
Alka-Seltzer neutralizes all the acid your stomach has churned out. For your upset stomach and headache, take Alka-Seltzer and feel better fast.
Did you drink your Alka-Seltzer?
The whole thing.
Ah, traveler, welcome to the promenade. Humble Quark at your service. Behold, Star Trek Deep Space Nine action figures. Commander Benjamin Sisko, he helps me run the station. And Security Chief Odo, very strict and sneaky for someone so honest. Here's Lieutenant Dax, Chief O'Brien, and Major Kira Nerys. I happen to know she's crazy about me. Wonderful, aren't they? Especially this one. So handsome. Pains me to part with it, but if you pay me now, security, what a pleasant surprise.
Hey, this is Terry Farrell of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and I'm here to invite you to join me and the Inglorious Trekspurts as we go on the ultimate road trek, visiting the most iconic Star Trek locations ever filmed. We'll share fun facts about scenes that were filmed there, their incredible Hollywood histories. We may even fight a Gorn or two along the way. We have many special guests from Star Trek movies and series. You can reserve your copy of this epic new documentary on Blu-ray or DVD, along with a gaggle of intergalactic rewards, such as Ernie, the pet Vasquez rock, limited edition collector pins, cool sci-fi swag, autographs, of course, and so much more, by going to makethetrek.com and supporting us as we boldly go to the greatest Star Trek locations ever filmed. Go to makethetrek.com and let's see what's out there. Engage.
Cholesterol levels of many Americans are too high, but for a group of people in New Jersey, cholesterol went down. They joined in a total dietary program to reduce cholesterol. Less fats, lean meats, egg and cheese substitutes, and highly polyunsaturated foods, including Promise margarine. Promise is highly polyunsaturated. The results? Their average cholesterol level went down. Down significantly. And Promise tastes like butter. Promise.
The Inglorious live tour continues as the Trekspurts make their way across this fine country of ours to all kinds of great convention goodness. You can see us next in Trek Conderoga as we join Jonathan Frakes, Brent Spiner, and Clint Howard for some Tranya at the Star Trek tour. Darren?
It's going to be amazing, particularly because it's going to be the first time that Mark Altman visits the Star Trek original series set tour. And I'm going to be there to watch every minute of it.
And me too. Wait. Not a hologram, not an imaginary story, but real, live. You can touch me, but only if you pay extra. Don't touch me. Don't touch me. Don't look at me.
And don't try and steal his coffee.
I can't wait. And of course, Memorial Day weekend will be in Oklahoma City for the inaugural Oklahoma City show from GalaxyCon in July. In July, Ashley and I will be at San Diego Comic-Con. Well, Darren, tell the folks where you'll be.
I will be in Raleigh, North Carolina. And I'm going to debut a little something about Star Trek the Motion Picture.
I would go, but I can't pronounce it. Right. And then of course, in August, sure, we're going to find our way to San Jose as we're reunited, and it feels so good, for the inaugural San Jose GalaxyCon. And we're looking forward to seeing a lot of you up there. It's going to be a really fun one.
That's exciting. Is that the right word?
It is exciting.
It's exactly.
It'll be the only time it takes you guys less time to get to a convention than it does me.
That's true. We can walk there in the time it takes you to get there.
Yeah.
And this fall, Ashley and I will be doing Nightmare Weekend back in Richmond. I know what restaurants we won't be going to. And we bring it on all home at Columbus, Ohio, at GalaxyCon. So for more information, go to galaxycon.com, comiccon.org, and StarTrekTour.com. And you can see us at one or all of these amazing conventions. And we can't wait to see you there. Always great to see our listeners join the expedition. So until then, keep on trekking ingloriously, of course, all the way to GalaxyCon, Star Trek Tour, and Comic-Con. So great to see you guys again. I want to talk a little bit about, there's a reason we showed some of your early work, besides the fact that it's awesome.
and to embarrass you.
Yeah, that too.
No, but people forget
you know, before you became the stars of Deep Space Nine, you were working actors. And what that's like before you get a TV series, when you're going from show to show. So, Nana, I want to ask you, what was that like? You know, you're doing all these guest star parts, you're in someone else's show, and then you get a call to come and audition for Star Trek. And at the time, Next Generation was on the air, but it was still his first run syndication, but it's a leading part. And it, you know, you think, okay, this other show's going 7 years. We're probably going to go 7 years. I'm not going to have to be auditioning. I'm not going to have to be doing all this stuff. What was that like for you, if you can put yourself back in that mind space?
Well, that wasn't the perspective at the day. The perspective was that science fiction, and it was true, it's where actors went to die. And you would never work again. And my manager actually told me, if you take this job, you probably won't work again. I mean, that's it. You are ruining a film career or getting a TV series on a network show. It was syndicated, which again was like going to, you know, the hinterlands. So I was dealing with that, but also dealing with, when I got the audition, I called my agent and said, I think you made a mistake. This is a man's role. Kira is arguing with the commander. And a woman didn't do that back in the 90s unless she was not a leading character and she was evil. There was the evil box or the good girl box. So I was dealing with that. This was an unusual, incredible opportunity to be everything I was because she wasn't human.
Yeah, and that was a time where if you were strong and you stood up for yourself, a lot of the male executives say, oh, she's very difficult. You know, you don't want to work with her. So, and here you are coming in and playing a very powerful, strong woman that you hadn't really seen on television before. How, when you went into audition, do you remember, like, did you hold back a little bit? I mean, or did you give it 100%? What was the way that you approached? Because it's political as well as being a great actor, because you have to know who you're auditioning for. What was that like?
To their credit, to the producers and the writers' credit, I did not hold back. I did not make, you know, because there's this moment, remember back in the day where you're like, hi, oh, it's so good to meet you, ha ha. And you have to be very nice and, you know, make sure that they're not threatened by you. And then you can do your performance because that helps. They see that you're acting and you won't be difficult on set, as you said. But I didn't do that. I just was Kira the minute I walked in. And they still wanted me.
So when you first met them, you didn't act.
Exactly. That's exactly right. I didn't have to be performatively what they wanted me to be.
You didn't fake the happy thing.
I didn't fake being, you know, I'll make myself small.
Which would have been the acting part.
Yeah. Right.
Because you're not small.
No.
And I'm glad.
It's interesting because as opposed to auditioning for a guest star spot, where maybe it's the casting director and maybe the creator's there, or the writer, director, when you're up for a series lead, it's the executive producer, sometimes it's the studio, it's a lot of people. So, Terry, what was that like for you? You just come off a show, Paper Dolls, but you're going in, they were having a tough time finding someone for this role, and yet there's all these people and all these expectations, and they don't make it easy to sort of relax.
Right. Well, Paper Dolls, I was 19, playing 16, and this was, I was 28, so it was...
Playing 280.
Right. 365.
Oh, okay.
Or eight, whatever.
But who's counting?
Anyway, for me, it was a different thing. I had done the Red Dwarf pilot. They wouldn't see me for Dax because they didn't feel like I was ready for it. Junie Lauer didn't think I was ready for it. And you know what? I probably wasn't. I was feeling very, that kind of thing was very nerve-wracking for me. And it was hard for me to build up my confidence because I hadn't worked for a while because of my personal life. But when Red Dwarf didn't go and they couldn't find Dax and I got lucky enough to go in for the audition, I was very nervous In fact, I got some of my lines backwards, and Rick Berman was like, that's okay. You just take a deep breath and you can start over again. And I did, and I think I said my name wrong. I don't remember how I said Jadzia wrong, but I did. And the girl that, I remember her name, but I won't say it, that there was a woman who I auditioned against quite a lot, actually, and she hadn't shown up. And so they were going to have another run the next week to do another test. So I asked if I could go back. And for SAG, they can't ask you to come back, but I wanted them to know that even though I was feeling really nervous, I was certainly brave enough to go, if I want the part bad enough, if I can do it twice, you know I'm going to show up to work and want to, I'm ready to play, right? So I went back the second time, and that's when I got it. But it was really scary and overwhelming because it was also a really weirdly empty room with a very long table. It was sort of like reading for spelling, where it was like you can't see all of the people because they're not in an audience form. They're along a conference table.
So it was like a star chamber? Yes, like a star chamber.
Yeah. Yeah, and there were people stacked behind. But yeah, at the same time, there are too many people to introduce yourself. And it was too important. I didn't want to spend any time saying, hi, how are you? I was just completely focused on trying to remember what I wanted to do with the character and my lines and that kind of thing.
How difficult is it to prepare for an audition like that? Because you're not solving the murder of the week. You're not playing a fashion model, which is something...
Or a fashion model solving the murder of the week.
That too.
Which would be kind of great.
But you're playing... a woman who has a worm inside of her who used to be a
like
man.
Like a tequila bottle, only different.
Who lives on a space station.
That's mezcal.
Yes, I wore a tequila outfit, actually.
Because you think, how am I going to dress? How am I going to present this role? How do you prepare for something
Well, like unfortunately, that? Or fortunately, I was friends with Marina Sirtis at the time, and she was like, oh, Rick Berman likes boobs, and you have to wear something really skin tight. So...
She wasn't wrong.
No, I had several fittings for my breasts, unfortunately, that needed to... Yeah.
Unlike but I basically, a tequila bottle.
I basically wore an outfit that looked like I was wearing... a pinup in all black.
Okay, I've got to interrupt now because I just realized something. So, Mark, look, you are a fantastic interviewer. I look up to you. I'm intimidated by your skills, but you have missed the obvious question from the top. And now that you're
Ashley? I'd love to know.
Now that you're talking about being all dressed in black, look at the two of you. Okay, so you're all in black. You're both wearing these black toques. It's like, my question is, are you planning to rob a bank after the
I went to the GalaxyCon store on my way here because I was so freaking cold. I couldn't stand it. I did not have a toque on before.
This was not coordinated. This was all...
No. Okay. No, I didn't. Well, I could take it off. Now I'm warm enough, but holy cow, it was cold out there,
wasn't it?
It
was cold in there, right?
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad we got to the bottom of that.
Yeah, I got to that. But you know what?
One of these kids is not like the other.
But I did... plan to rob a bank earlier today. That's why I dressed in the morning like this. Yes.
She's actually auditioning for the remake of...
Heat.
Okay. I was going to go for the one with, the older movie, the really cool one with Cary Grant and...
The Goonies.
To Catch a Thief.
To Catch a Thief.
Definitely not the
like
Goonies.
Like raising it up to catch a thief. Okay.
He doesn't rob a bank in that. He robs jewels. He's a jewel thief.
Yeah, but that's what she looks like. I'm elevating.
That's what he looks like. Okay.
We will return to the panel in a moment.
Okay, I wasn't thinking about the worm. I wasn't thinking about the lifetimes. I was just thinking about looking military. I thought if I focus on, because I didn't have to work on looking young. I was 28. And I was nervous, so I was trying to fight against being nervous. And so thinking about the military... I've always been pretty good about standing up straight. I'm 6 feet tall, so there's some givens there that made me feel empowered. But yeah, you can't, what do you do with, I have a worm in me. I have a symbiont, so what? I have lifetimes, What does that mean? I don't even know what that means
yet.
No
one ever thinks about the worm. How about, what does the worm feel about all this? See?
The worm is a
I don't have the worm anymore. Well, somebody else has the worm.
Someone else has it.
But what's so interesting...
I'll get it back.
What's so interesting was what you just said. You said you talked to Marina, and the big acting advice she gave you was pad your breasts and look sexy.
Exactly.
Which brings me to Nana and the book that you're writing. And I think that you're looking back 30 years at what you, and not just you, but actresses went through at the time and how that has evolved since then to today. And I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about this book that you're just finishing.
Yeah, I talked to so many of the women actors from over the whole franchise, including a lot of the guest stars from the original, which was they came, about five or six of the women came to my house for lunch, and it was filmed as it should have been, because that was quite something. And from there, I went through to Strange New Worlds and interviewed as many women as I could, and also audience members, because what I was looking at is these women who were in Hollywood going through these decades, what was that like while they were projecting this much wider range and more ability to dream that they gave the audience? There were so many audience members who said, I became a doctor because of Dr. Crusher, or a therapist because of Marina's character, or in the military, or self-acceptance because I'm different, because I contain multitudes, and I'm not sure where I land. What I certainly saw was the happiest thing for me is the younger actors didn't know what I was talking about with some of the things that we went through. And their reaction was like, what? No, that would not fly. And I was like, good. That you, because the culture in Hollywood is obviously setting up the situation where you feel entitled to say that. It's not just one person going, no more. You'll be shot down, you're out, because that was what we were told and it was true. But that people are starting to accept the fact that bias and bad treatment of people isn't going to fly anymore. And that's the happy part.
I want to take you guys to sort of take us back to what it was like. A lot of people, they've never been on a film set. They don't know what your experience is like. And they don't know how hard it is, because it sounds so glamorous and so exciting. And, you know, a lot of that was waiting around. But when you walk into the gates of Paramount and would go to Star Trek Alley, which is what it was called, because you had Next Generation across the street and Deep Space Nine, these big, beautiful sets. What was a day like? Like, take us back to a day in your life back then when you were working, as opposed to at the supermarket because you were off that day. You were on the call sheet, you were there.
Can I just say, even in the sixth season, driving up at 4:45 in the morning, I would still go like, oh my God, I work at Paramount Pictures. Oh my God, I'm working at a movie studio. It was still...
Oh yeah.
You're not projecting that it's probably going to be a 20-hour day. It's just part of... There's this thing about the show must go on, right? So growing up in the generation, we did a pull up your bootstraps. You're going to get it together. This is how you handle it. You just squish it down and keep going. Is the perfect mentality for the job we had. And it makes you feel, it made me feel, I'll speak for myself, to be part of a team, the camaraderie that we were all getting through it together. It was our own personal war that we got through together.
And that is such a good point, because surprisingly enough, a lot of it is very militaristic. It was developed, the part of Hollywood we were a part of was developed by people who were in the Army, and they kept the language and they kept the way it was run, a lot of it. So, you know, at like being a good soldier, you know that your purpose is greater than yourself. It's the show. The show must go on. tough if you don't feel good. You're showing up. You have 104 fever. You're going on because no one else can do it. And this is too expensive of a day. You know, so it's,
they prop you up. Literally, we've been propped up to get scenes done.
Yeah. And so, yes, there is the moment every single time. As Terry said, you go through the gates and the sun's just coming up or it's dark and still. And you go, this is paramount. All the movies I ever watched as a kid, I'm part of this. I'm aware of the ghosts in these buildings, and now mine is in there too. And it's really, it's very emotional. And it was like a marathon that wouldn't end, because a couple of weeks of no less than 16-hour days, 20-hour days, over and over and over again, so that it eats into the Saturday morning. So the you don't have a chance to physically recover. It's okay if you do that for a month or two or three for a movie, but when you're doing it, you're doing 26 shows. It's like you're mentally impaired slightly, and you're just getting through.
You have to hunker down and get through it.
Yeah.
Get done like halfway through May, and we started at the beginning of July. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But then it's a little earlier because you got to come back in for fittings. You have to finish up interviews.
Yeah.
And I wanted to say, too, the word paramount, the most important, the peak of the mountain, right? It was like,
yeah.
There's something about knowing what that word means, too. Even subliminally going through that was like, I don't know. It's so, I feel it right now.
Mm-hmm. But also there's this, you're up and doing a scene and you're fighting Cardassians or whatever it is you're doing, and it's active and it's emotional. And then you go back to your trailer and it's this.
Yeah.
For a couple of hours. And then they call you and say, okay, you're back. And then you're back and you're doing it. So it's like, it's a very stop, start, kind of life. Yeah. It's not like a theatrical experience where you live the whole thing within 2 or 3 hours and you're finished and there's like a button on it for you and you can go back to your own life. And it's structured with ritual so you can emotionally get in and out. It's hard to maintain that through a day and come in, especially if it's traumatic, if you're doing traumatic scenes. So you kind of, you can, if you're not careful, you can just, and after all, thoughts dropped in your mind, your body believes it. Your body is dependent on your mind to tell you what's going on. If you drop traumatic thoughts and you don't go, okay, now I'm somewhere else, your body's going to just stay there. And so it was wearing.
Mm-hmm. Plus on film and TV, the other crew makes up a huge portion of it. And everyone is working these horrific hours.
Yeah.
And everyone is pushing as hard as everyone else. Mm-hmm. And it's all a team thing that everyone is pushing this thing up the hill.
Yeah.
And you accept that responsibility
for
everybody's part. Everybody's part has their own needs and responsibility to everyone else on the set.
And that collaboration is what is so wonderful. You know, I mean, what are we all after? Connection. This is connection. This is a frequency we talk on. Star Trek for all of us. And we're connected now. And with the crew, it was exactly that. I remember one scene. I can't remember what show it was. But I was lying on a bed telling a long story. And at a certain line, the camera was doing this long crawl toward me. And when they reached a certain point, I needed to cry. And something went wrong with the camera, and I cried, and they said, we got to do it again. And it was like, come on, Anna, come on, you could do it, you could do it. And it was like us together going, we've all got to make this moment happen, no matter how difficult it is. And that's a moment I don't forget, that collaboration.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh. Yeah.
When you first premiered, Next Generation was still on the air, and it was like at its apex. You were like Jan Brady to Marsha Brady, right? But then Next Generation ends and goes to the movies. Now Voyager comes along. Now they're Jan, and you're Marsha.
No.
They were Marcia.
We're Cindy.
The people out there are like, what are they talking about?
We turned into Cindy. Yeah.
Oh. It's true, but there was a great advantage to that. Mm-hmm. No one was watching us. So
you set the house on fire.
So Ira set the house on fire.
Yeah, Ira talks about how he was so happy for that stroke of luck because then he could write things and they really weren't paying as much attention. They being the producers, the studio.
They would have stopped us.
The eye of Sauron turned to them.
That's how Ira described it, which is a great, you know, a great analogy. You know, it's so funny. I have to say, we were talking to Richard Dreyfuss the other day, which is not nearly as exciting as talking to you. And he's talking about how much Robert Shaw hated The Man in the Glass Booth, which he wrote the movie adaptation. And all I could think, and I didn't say this to Dreyfuss, was Duet is the best adaptation of The Man in the Glass Booth. And what a fantastic episode that
it
is.
Was.
And how great you are in that episode. How magnificent that. All these years later, it still stands up. It's like one of those towering achievements of the series. And you got to work with Harris Yulin in that. Love to talk about some of him and some of the other great guest stars over the years that graced the stages, whether it be Brock Peters or
Louise Fletcher.
Frank Langella, Louise Fletcher. What that was like, because you talk about being the Cindy, which makes Enterprise Cousin Oliver, but if you're the Cindy Brady...
they definitely were.
my question to you is, you know, you still had all these great people who came to play with you. So you
were... Yeah, but we didn't deserve to be Cindy. Cousin Oliver had its place. Sorry. Not the actors, they're amazing. But the show was not as good.
The
Sorry.
Writing was so good. I think the writing attracted some of these guest stars because it was just so rich. It was amazing. And all the actors you mentioned come to play. They actually like to act, not just to make a paycheck. So I think that they were attracted to the fact that it was so interesting.
Well, because there was great writing, and that's, you know, a testament to the amazing writing team, because you look at how successful Ron Moore has been since, and to a certain extent, Renee and Robert Hewitt Wolf, and, you know, Ira and Michael as well were great coaches. And as we know, Michael was a huge baseball fan. So, and we talked about this last year, but I love this story, so I'm going to break my rule of not asking the same questions. But let's talk about the baseball episode for you, because, you know, we all thought, oh my God, you're so capable and so competent and so good at everything. And you must have loved the baseball episode, but.
No, they had to hire a baseball player to, and I can't remember who it was, but they hired a pro baseball player to teach me how to throw a ball.
This actually sounds like a Brady Bunch episode.
How is it that Max was good at something, but you?
I'm athletic, but I can't tell when something's coming at me. Avery Brooks couldn't believe it. In one scene, he did a bit of an improv. We're all in a circle, and he throws me this bag. It was a light bag from the other side of the circle. He throws it to me because we're about to go on our mission. It was like a cool thing to do. And he threw it at me, and I stood like this. And it hit me in the face. And he was like, what? Don't you have any basic instinct to catch? And I really don't. So I had to learn how to do it. And it was a big deal when I hit the ball, because the day wasn't going to end until I hit that ball. And the whole crew was like, she's never going to do it. She is never going to hit it. And I hit it first off, because I had been practicing with a baseball player for like 3 weeks. And I hit it. The first time we filmed, they practically carried me on their shoulders. They were so thrilled.
So if you got Pete Rose to sign a baseball, you know, Nanak can also sign baseballs for you if you
That's
want.
That's right.
Terry, I want to ask you, it really felt, there was some reluctance among some of the writers. They felt, oh, when Michael joined the show, it meant we weren't good enough. We needed help, you know. But it seems like you became real partners in crime, and that you had somebody to confide in and work with, and that it gave your character, you know,
a chance to sort of, like, somebody both behind the scenes and on stage that was a partner, had been through what you had been through. Can you talk a little bit about what was that transformative, that fourth season for you? Did you feel that it helped your character, helped you as a, you know, on stage to have Michael there?
I think it helped me because Michael was my friend before he came to work on the show, because we had Marina in common. The three of us were buddies. And so the first scene we had together, actually, Nana and I come out of the Hollow Suite dressed from Camelot times. But Michael and I, he's like, hey, if we flirt with each other, it's not written that way, but if we flirt with each other, maybe they'll write more stuff for us so that we can hang out together.
How did that work out?
Ask them. Yeah, so that pretty much worked out.
And yeah. It's so funny because he was very outspoken how much he hated being paired with Troy in Next Generation.
Well, did he say he hated working with me?
No, he loved working with you.
You see?
This is what I'm saying.
Well, we had reasonable arguments. Meaning, like, we'd worked it out. Like, I don't know why I just said like three times, four or five. Anyway, tell me if I'm wrong. This is what would happen when I would do a scene with Michael. Tell me if your experience was different. We'd come in, we'd rehearse, we'd go back to our trailers for touch-ups, to change our clothes while they're lighting. We come back in, the lighting's done, we're ready to film, and we start to do the scene, and then, Michael, yes, Michael. I was just thinking, there's this problem I'm having with the scene. No, not now. We're ready to film it, right? See? See? And it really, ah, oh, not Michael Dorn. Wow. And he would be like, but I'm making a good point. Call Michael Piller last night. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. So then it would become, if it was just the two of us, I'd be reasonably upset with him because it might change some wording I have. And it was like all of the techno babble I'd had, that's all my memory capacity I had for the day. I didn't have any more left over for, yeah, let's rewrite that scene. That'll be fun. Let's try that. So, but so then we'd talk it out, the two of us. And I think it was really an important relationship for me, Terry, just in general in life, to work with somebody where we could disagree and have a conversation and come to an understanding and maybe not like each other that day, but professionally get through it okay. And I think that really made us have a really great friendship. And I think that translated on, we never had a romantic, we had a romance of sort, but it was never a realized romance off set. And I think in a way that was really good because it was like, then we could always play that tension because it was just there. We just never did anything about it.
Yeah, and it gave you a chance to play real human relationships because as you've talked about, it's so hard to memorize that techno babble because there's nothing you can relate to in your real life or in real science. So they just give you all this gobbledygook that, you know, and people forget. It's not like you're getting these scripts a week earlier. Sometimes right. You're getting the rewrite the night before, and yeah. You're expected to know these lines, you know, perfectly when you show up on stage the next day, and that's not easy.
Yeah,
that
was with meaning in them, when you don't really know what it is saying.
Yeah,
and it doesn't really say anything at all.
Right. Right. Exactly. But you know, you try to do as much substitution as possible. Right, for what things might be, whether it's a car or not. But it's still an alien name that, you know, it's an alien, but what was that word again? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The Kobliads, you know? not the turbo.
Stembolts.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Stembolts.
The thruster shields are down or whatever they are.
You know the Stembolts, Bob and Elaine.
Exactly.
With the Underhills.
It was like a Jay Leno thing. And everybody, is that a kind of cheese? Is it a wine? No, it actually means. Right.
But I remember seeing the point in, because I recently watched it, that they really gave you things to play instead of just saying, oh, you're wise, that you, through your life, gathered all these things that you were curious about and interested in and good at, and that you had, you know, rough and tumble friends that you'd go off on, you know, Klingons that you knew. And that really made, I think, everyone understand Jadzia so much better, yeah, that you did things instead of just were talked about.
And isn't that always more interesting, always, though? Because it's a visual medium. So if you're not showing the audience who the characters are and you're just constantly telling. Yeah, what is it called? Exposition. Yeah.
Well, it's that's like sort of hearsay drama.
Oh, that, gosh, it's like so boring.
That episode, Blood Oath, felt like the demarcation point for Jadzia, where that character went from, she's the science officer, and she's, I guess, old, and she knows Sisko, to, oh, wow. It's like suddenly it goes from she has things she talks about to she has a history. Right. And she has these relationships that we never thought about. And she has these capabilities that we never saw but make perfect sense.
Thank you. Yeah, that makes so much sense. I'm excited because I'm rewatching it with the Delta.
I was just going to ask you.
Were you?
Yeah. I wanted to ask you both about that because the audience and us have a certain perspective on you and your characters and the show, and we love it, that you will never be able to quite understand, right? So, because you were there, and you were there until, you know, working Fratterdays, and, you know, it's a whole different journey.
Did you just say Fratterdays?
Yeah.
I love that. So, I've never heard that.
Really? Okay, well, so my question is, you're rewatching it now for the Delta Flyers. You rewatched it while you were doing research for your book. What surprised you, or what are your takeaways from, I assume you weren't sitting at home watching it for years, now
like
after all these
Boulevard.
Years,
yeah,
to go
with the nose half off my, you know,
that's
tangy
me
there.
Right,
that's
there.
Me.
I mean, Norma Desmond, you just watch it all day.
Right, right.
Or Jim Carrey, it's on a loop.
What was it like going back and watching, like, sort of what's your perspective on seeing the show again for both of you?
My perspective is that we did it too soon. It was ahead of its time, and we are a space station that we need to stay on for a certain amount of time and figure it out all out between us, all the diverse, strange, different people. And so it just seems very timeless, the show. And I'm kind of amazed when I looked at the 90s and what women were, the place women were in, it's amazing what we were given license to do. And I do put a lot of that on Ira Stephen Bear and the fact that no one was poking him and saying, you can't do that. That we had such a big playing field and such a range of things that two women could do. And not just us, the other women. I mean, you know, there was Cassidy Yates, unbelievable character, you know. She's captain, and she tells Sisko, no, not so fast. Wait a minute. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And we'll have a relationship. It's just that the women had really interesting, good lives.
And what was your reaction as you watched it for Delta Flyers? You're still in the first season, I imagine, though.
Delta Flyers, Journey Through the Wormhole, Patreon. Please, everyone, sign up because I'll be lonely without you. But I just started. I just saw the pilot and the first two episodes. Man Alone, and Past Prologue. I think it actually was Past Prologue and then Man Alone. So this is way more new for me to be watching it back. I'm really enjoying it, though. And I'm watching it. It's so fun to watch it with fresh eyes, isn't it? Because it's such a long time ago to see myself. I have so much compassion for that young woman, you know, starting this job at 28 and not really knowing what was happening. And I was just telling Nana, watching it through the lens of knowing what was happening to me, Terry, as I'm watching that, I'm having compassion for myself and for the other actors and just seeing how the makeup evolves. So because it's the very beginning of it for me, it's not fully baked for me yet. I'm really excited that I get to take it one step at a time without the pressure of, oh, I hope I'm good this week. What did I like about this week? What didn't I like about this week? What can I do better? I'm just watching it.
You get to enjoy the show.
I get to enjoy the show.
That's so nice.
Isn't that nice? And I want to add, because you've said this in the past, so this is where I've gotten this to. If it weren't for Laura Bear saying, to Ira Steven Bear several times, you know, so Laura had been a great big cheerleader for both of our characters and for women in general, and educating her husband on... this would be a better idea. So, I mean, she is a powerful woman in that respect, for
really
sure.
Really powerful.
Yeah, she didn't write the scenes.
Right, sure.
But
astrophysicist and ballerina. That's quite a combination.
Woo!
Wow, it sounds like a sitcom. Yeah. That's great.
And she's gorgeous.
And she puts up with Ira, so kudos to her.
That's almost unbelievable.
Well, we got to do some questions, right? I mean,
look at them run.
Nobody's excited about that.
Aww. Oh, man. Okay, everybody line up. And try and, because we totally blew this. We don't have as much time as we would like for questions. So let's try and make them quick and to the point if possible.
All right.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Katie, and I'm a meteorologist. And I was wondering, what's the worst weather you've had to deal with on set or in real life? Because I always get blamed for it, and I love hearing people's stories.
I love weather. I love weather. I don't care what it is. And I grew up with tornadoes in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. I'm trying to talk as fast as possible. Love a snowstorm. I love preparing. I am the pantry person. Ask my son. He's like, how does one person need all this food? You never know. Love weather.
I lived in the tip of Manhattan when the hurricane hit. And it looked like a disaster movie, looking out of the building. It was like looking out of the building, not looking out of the building, looking out of the building, not looking out of the building. And we lost power for 10 days, and it felt like we were in a disaster movie. And then we'd take the, you know, subway uptown, and it was like normal life. It was hard to believe. But, yeah, that was the worst weather I've ever been through. And I'll never forget, my son and his friend were staying in the apartment with us because the friend couldn't leave. And they were both playing some game on the computer. And I was, look out the window. This is historic. And I was like, yeah, anyway. It just didn't matter. It was probably better.
Well, thank you. And if you ever want to chase tornadoes, my sidekick seat is open.
Very cool.
Oh, cool. My stepdad, not the one that is my favorite one that has been my dad for most of my natural life, used to take me and my sister, carry us under his arms so we go chase tornadoes.
Very.
On foot.
Wow. Really scary.
With Bill Paxton.
Come back.
Hi, I'm Kaden. I'm from Minneapolis, Minnesota, and I'm inspired by you. If you could go back and just talk to yourself when you were just put on, like just hired and just put on the job, what advice would you give? What would you say?
I would say, feel compassion for yourself, allow yourself the room to fail and to learn, and if that doesn't work, so be it. But don't accommodate to the point where you start beating yourself up like other people around you might.
I would say trust yourself. Trust yourself. 100%. You know what you're doing. Don't listen to all the other voices. You're fine.
My name is Amanda, and I want to know, Nana, in light of what you were sharing about the first time you were reading Kira's voice and attitude and aspect, both of your characters changed the way that women were portrayed on TV and the way that we see ourselves and how we view the world, right? When did you first know that Jadzia and Kira were going to be incendiary in terms of just like these trailblazers for the ways that women could show up and be smart and brilliant and badass and just awesome?
Well, for me, that didn't happen for many years, probably decades, because at the time, my character wasn't accepted, and it was like, oh, too much. Ooh, too much. You're going too far. And I just kind of hunkered down and did it anyway because it was such an opportunity to be the kind of woman I wanted to be in my own life. And it was really in writing the book and talking to the people that were inspired that I realized what a cultural effect just the opportunity gave. And here's the thing. What's really incredible, there were young girls and women and other people out there too who saw us, didn't have support around them, and found virtual mentors in a TV show. If that's not indomitable human spirit, I don't know what is. That's what's impressive.
Hi, I'm Mike, and I asked Terry a little bit about this at the table earlier, but I want to expand it some, and it kind of tacks on to the last question. In like the YouTube world right now, from like the queer spaces, the feminist spaces, the marginalized community spaces, people are doing these character deep dives of, you know, trans experience, being a strong woman in a strong masculine culture, of being queer, like, you know, Dr. Bashir's relationships. People have compared Dax to being trans experience, things like that. When you were making Deep Space Nine, how much, if any, awareness did you have of how powerful that was going to be, or how much that was actually what you were portraying?
I think you did.
This one?
Yeah.
To piggyback on the first, I don't want, because I know I can see how little time we have. I think from reading it the first time, I thought that my character, definitely because of how my character was written and the description of my character, that I had, that I couldn't see what was going to happen for sure. But I had some idea of knowing that I was, because I had lived 7 lifetimes, that it was going to be really fucking interesting. Yeah. And that it was going to be I loved Star Trek, the original series, and I loved that it was groundbreaking. I loved that it was, you know, the first interracial kiss, so that when I got to be married to a man of color, when I got to have a same-sex relationship, and even though I don't think trans is the right description of Dax, I love being the poster child, because anybody who feels disenfranchised, and I know Nana feels the same way, we are honored to stand up and be there for you, because nobody should feel othered. Nobody.
Hi.
Stop it.
Hi.
That's Rebecca.
Hi. How you doing? So, Spotify rap is like a thing right now. So what is your like most listened to song this year, you think?
Ooh, most listened to song. I thought you'd say most listened to podcast, but okay.
Or that too.
Most listened to song?
Yeah.
Purple Hat by Sophie Tucker. I weirdly. That's something that if I just have to get myself back up, listen to Purple Hat.
Wow. Okay. Weirdly, I don't know. Maybe this isn't weird. Maybe I'll get it. My divorce wasn't that far away ago. And Empty Nester is second year. So I have to be honest, a lot of music for me has been too sensitive and triggering. So I will most likely listen to anything that has to do with a symphony. I don't even need to, or, you know, spa music. And I know it's not very interesting, but it really is an emotional trigger for me to listen to songs, and being 60 years old and being alone. It can sometimes be too depressing to hear things that used to make me really excited. So I will come back to music But for right now, I listen to things without an opinion.
Wow, a music conversation with no Taylor Swift. This might be a first. Liz?
Hi. So somebody who was raised by their grandparents and had a lot of time to watch me TV, who grew up loving Matlock, the Andy Griffith Show, all of Andy's work. Got any fun stories about him?
About Andy?
About Andy.
Not really. I don't have any stories about Andy. But I too grew up loving him. Yeah. Very cool. Great actor.
Thank you.
And if you haven't seen Face in the Crowd with Andy Griffith, that is his best film. You have to see it.
Brilliant.
I brought the baby back for Terry.
Stop. I don't have time to come back and grab her. She's only 10 weeks old.
I love you guys so much. You're amazing. First TV crushes. I can admit it. But what was it like doing Far Beyond the Stars and the scene with Avery just absolutely losing it?
You know, Avery had a saying when something was, when you just kind of transcended the scene and it just went and everyone goes into a flow state. And he called it God showing up. He said, well, God showed up in that. And for Avery in that scene, it was like God showed up. He went to a place that was, you know, you go, you don't want to move because you don't want to break anything. But it's very, very powerful to be in the room with that kind of emotion. And it was upsetting and disturbing and also, you know, humbling as an actor to watch another actor go there and be that. So it was a complicated place to be. Yeah.
Well,
thank you.
I wish we had another hour. We don't, unfortunately. But you guys are going to be at your booth. You're going to be signing, I'm sure, answering questions. But before we do that, as is the tradition at GalaxyCon, they're going to take a giant group selfie. So come take your selfie with them. And then stay for Walter Koenig, and then go see them at their booth. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Terry.
Thank you, everybody.
That was wonderful. Welcome back. You know, it's so funny. One night I was coming back from dinner and I was exhausted. We'd done like 6 panels that day and I was so tired. Dinner was great, but it was late. And I'm walking back to my room and all of a sudden I see, hey, Altman, is that you? And I turn around.
And he threw a can at your head. Sorry.
And standing in the doorway is Terry Farrell. And I'm like, oh, hey, Terry. And she goes, oh, why don't you come in for a little while and we'll talk and we'll hang out. I'm like, the last thing in the world I wanted to do was hang out, but it was Terry Farrell, who I love and adore, and it was the one person I would have said yes to. And I ended up having a great conversation, and we hung out for a while. But I was so tired. And I finally get back to my room, like, oh, okay, I'm going to go sleep. And she calls me, and she goes, you left your jacket here. It's like, oh, God, I can't win. And I almost was like going to be like, ah, you keep it.
My gift to you.
Wait a minute. You're telling me that you spent an hour or so hanging out with Terry Farrell and you say you can't win?
Give me a break.
Okay.
What's your problem?
How dare you?
Sorry. No. I mean, look, and she's great. I'm glad that she's on the mend.
Yep.
Which is good. And I'm glad we finally got to have dinner with her on Sunday night, you know?
I don't want to keep having to call her Gimpy. I really don't.
Bring out the Gimp! Yeah. So how about that Ashley joke? You look like you're going to rob a bank. That was so funny. Oh my gosh.
It was resolved later on, I guess that Sunday evening, where Nana was still dressed like that, but she had to carry around a little parcel of cash. And we said, okay, we know where you got that.
I didn't realize it was a runner.
Because it finally came full circle.
I honestly, I could not understand how I was the only person who was seeing it. Like, it was just, here they are. Why is this
happening?
We were
all seeing it, but you put it together.
It was such a fun panel. I love them so much.
Just like you making Nick Meyer laugh.
That's right.
That was another one of the classics.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Irishman, my favorite superhero movie. That was really good. Okay. Well, look, that was Nana and Terry, frequent guests of the podcast. And guess what? They will be back. And of course, we are traveling the country and the globe with Terry Farrell for a new documentary.
Well, I guess, yeah, I don't technically, know. It is the globe because there's no other space. Globe beyond. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're so happy to have Terry as a part of this. Because not only does she have great stories about her time on Star Trek, but she's just fun to be around and funny. Sweet.
And she's a fan.
You
know,
you forget she was on a sitcom for years. She's very funny. She's very quick. She's the perfect person to go on this road trip with us, or this road trek, if you will.
Terry and the Trexperts.
Terry and the Trexperts. In space. Yep. They're like Josie and the Pussycats, but with us.
In space.
And if you want to help support the making of this documentary, go to makethetrek.com. That's makethetrek.com for more information about how to support our epic new documentary that begins filming later this year. A very special thanks to Mark Rivera, Peter Holmstrom, for all their help making this podcast sound as good as it does. And of course, you can bring new listeners to our podcast. And I have to say, we had a very good 2024. According to Spotify, I think we were up substantially in all our demos and listeners.
I think you mean 2023. We haven't had.
Yes, in 2023.
But no, this is time traveler, Mark. All right.
Uh-oh, the time police are coming after me. What are they on Star Trek, the time people?
You're Matt Frewer.
I'm Matt Frewer.
From the future.
That's right. I've come back. But he wasn't really, he like stole a time.
He was a liar.
He was a liar, Mr. Walsh. Yeah. Who are the guys that in the trials and tribulations of the time cops?
Temporal police.
Yeah. How funny would it be if that had been time cop? If that had been Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Yeah.
Cisco, what
you
did you
guy
do?
From time
they would have like imagine you know the fight in the mess hall. With Jean-Claude Van Damme in it.
How can you have a fight in the mess hall? I mean, there was a fight in the mess hall.
I know he's doing all of this high kicking and everything, and all they have to do is phaser him. So yeah. I don't know how to tell.
He's himself and passes out.
People love that movie, Time Cop. It's not very good.
You know, it is what it is.
I mean, you know, it's Peter
Hines. Coming this Wednesday, it's not Time Cop.
Yeah. Although I do like, who was it? Was it Claire Forlani? Who was in it with him? No, Mia Sara. Mia Sara. I like that Mia Sara. So she was in it with him. The beginning of the movie's good. Then it sort of falls apart. Okay. So what was I saying? I say you also can subscribe to our subscriber-only podcast, TrekSportsPlus.com, and you can let us know what you think of this and every – or of Time Cop, quite honestly. You can let us know that too at by subscribing or emailing us at TrekSportsPlus@gmail.com or going on one of the many social channels that we're on at Inglourious Trek, Inglourious Treksports, and many social channels. See, I really think this is good. Instead of giving this long list of all these bullshit social channels, I just say, we're on them all. Just
and
go.
And then you take the equal amount of time explaining how it's better that it's shorter. I love that part.
So on behalf of Ashley Edward Miller, Darren, you're funny. You're like a clown. And Ashley Edward Miller, Darren Doctor, myself, Mark A. Altman, keep on trekking ingloriously, of course. And we'll see you next Thursday. 'Darren, there's this rumor going around that you got a new podcast.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's Treksports adjacent. It's It's a fun thing. You know, we
what
all
is
know,
it?
We all, it's called the Weirded Beardos. And before you react, it's Kirk Thatcher, our favorite punk on the bus, and myself just talking about stuff. Talking
but
about
I hate
our,
him.
You don't hate him.
No, I'm kidding. I'm doing a song from Star Trek IV. I hate you, right?
Right. I hate you. I berate you.
Oh, yeah. But I don't berate him, and I don't hate him. And if he's involved with you, then I love you.
Well, thanks. And, you know, it's basically just us talking about sort of all things related to our history of working in the industry. You know, together we have like 78 years of experience working in the entertainment biz.
I'm going to have to listen to that. I thought it was about maintaining your beards or something.
It has nothing to do with beards, actually, which is kind of funny. But it's fun. We basically hang out for an hour every other week. So come and join us. Look for the Weirded Beardos on Spotify if you just want to hear the audio. And we're actually on YouTube as well, the Weirded Beardos.
Great. Can't wait to check it out.
Thanks.
First start of the right and straight on till morning.